going to talk to Shape of God, pronouns he, him, calling in from Texas, says secularism is a form of faith. Can I call you Shape? Is there a shorter name I can give you, or do you prefer Shape of God? Also, how are you? Hello.
Oh.
We call him Sog.
Oh, I'm sorry. That was by mistake.
Okay.
Sheep of God. I meant Sheep of God.
It still would be
Sog.
Oh,
sheep, like
still
a lamb.
Still is going to be Sog. That's
yeah.
all I'm saying.
Yeah.
Sog.
Okay. All right, cool. Can I call you Sheep, or do you prefer anything else?
My name is Emmanuel.
Emmanuel. Okay,
there
cool.
There we go.
You say secularism is a form of faith. What do you mean by that? Yeah, I remember you. Yeah. I remember you were the slave of Christ at that point, and now you're the sheep of God. Both of these sound horrible, but I'm not going to get into that because I want to talk about your point here. You said that secularism is a form of faith. What do you mean by that?
Let me start with a question, and I'll make an argument. My question is, do you have a psychological knowledge?
Psychological knowledge?
Do you know, like, psychology? Yeah. Do you have, like...
A tiny bit. Psychology? So when I was getting my degree in education, I had to take a couple of psychology classes, but I would not call myself a psychologist, an expert in any way, but I know a thing or two about it, enough to pass a couple of classes.
I took one class.
Because I've been seeing this, atheist shows and stuff. And it has it's been having a reverse effect on me. So the more
driven closer to faith because of us
atheist shows.
Yeah,
the more that I see atheist shows, the more that I became more and more firm believer. I don't know why. That's just like weird.
I don't know why either.
Let me ask a question real quick. When you watched more atheist shows, was it like more evidence fell out of the sky onto your lap? Because I'm not really sure how. Right, like how does that work? I don't get it.
No, in a sense that, you know, I used to watch Matt a lot, and the more that he quotes the Bible and he's trying to show the errors in the Bible, the more I start reading the Bible. So the more that I know what my doctrine is.
Interesting. So what do you mean by secularism as a form of faith?
Oh, so a form of faith is like you have some beliefs and some principles. So you have like a common, moral ethics, basically, I think so. So what I think is, for example, you know, in Christianity, even though Christians are different, they all like, we all have like a same form of, not just dogmas, but also we have similar views on ethics. And most people in the worldview of secularism have this common thing. And I think it's like a form of faith because, you know, I think faith is like evidence for things which are not seen. And I think faith is evidence. I don't think faith is believing in something that's not necessarily visible. Or I don't believe that faith is believing in something that you don't have evidence for. I believe faith is evidence by itself. So
faith is evidence by itself. Okay, so let's address that then. This is something that I've said on the show before, and I'm happy to say it again. I'm here in my office right now, and over there in that corner, there is a closet. And inside that closet, there is a goblin. His name is Roland. He eats Subway sandwiches, and he grants wishes when he feels
Roland.
Like it. I have complete faith in Roland the Closet Goblin. Does that make him real?
No, that doesn't make him real, but that's faith.
Is that evidence? Is that evidence that Roland is real? Could I not then say I have good, strong evidence in Roland because I have faith in him?
Okay. By the way, you're putting out, you know, two different things here. So
no,
what I mean
out.
Is...
He's pointing
I didn't explain
out
the... what I mean.
Well, hold on, it's important.
You said faith is evidence.
He's pointing out the equivocation that you're making.
Yeah,
right?
but you're just making an example out of deception. That's deception. Believing in something that's not real.
You said that faith is evidence. So if I have evidence in something, I then, you know, or if I have faith in something, then I then have evidence for it. That's what you said just a minute ago. Did I mishear you?
No. You're correct. You heard what you heard, but that's like falsified.
So then what's the difference if I say I have strong faith in Roland in the Closet Goblin? Why is that not evidence? But if I say I have faith in God, that is evidence. What's the difference between those two things?
Because what you just said, you have a goblin, that's not scriptural, but having a faith in God.
What if I read about him in a book?
Scripture is evidence.
Yeah.
What if I read about him in a book?
The only copy of that book is actually in my office. And so he is taking it from scripture.
It's true. It's true. He's got the book about Roland and I read it. And that means it's scriptural and I have complete faith in him. Why does it break down? Why does that not work?
I guess it's the same thing. I agree with you. I think you mean it's like this doesn't necessarily mean it's superior than the other one. that you're just making.
No, I mean,
a lot of sense.
That's not what I'm saying at all. What I'm saying is, just because you believe in something, and just because you read it in a book, and just because that book is very old, and just because other people also like that book, and just because the book or the belief or whatever brings meaning to your life, or just because the book or the belief or whatever got you out of a bad situation, or just because the book or the belief or whatever turned your life around when you were in a bad way, no matter what, none of that makes it true. The thing that makes a thing true is it being true. And if it were true, it would have actual evidence, something that I can test, something I can verify, something that we can all go look at. So for me to just say, I read about a book about this goblin and now I believe in this goblin and my life has changed because of this goblin. And the more shows I see that say that there are no goblins, the more I know for sure there's a goblin. Not one single bit of that actually means that there's a goblin in my closet. None of that is evidence.
Okay. By the way, let me ask you a question. Do you think you're a body, or do you think you are a body?
That's a whole different topic, and I want to stick to what we're on right now. We can get to that later.
Yeah, because what was just
I agree with you, so I don't want to debate what you're saying.
Hold on, real quick. When he gave, so let me like break this down, right? Because what we have is we have a belief, right? A belief in a proposition, right? A proposition like you think God exists or Roland the Goblin, right? There's a belief there. Now we can parrot everything that you use. Force can parrot it as well. And what this shows is that there's nothing actually justifying it, right? There's nothing justificatory for the actual proposition that gains us to knowledge. If me and you both agree that in order for our belief to become knowledge, we have to justify it, right? It has to be justified and it has to be true. I can't just guess and get, you know, I think the US will win today or something, and then I'm wrong, and then they're right, or they do win. Doesn't mean I had justification. It means I guessed. There's a huge distinction here that when you believe in a proposition, you have an attitude towards it and you think it's true, but we're missing the next thing, which is something that justifies it so we can count it as knowledge. And I'm not seeing how, well, let me just ask you, do you agree that it's not enough to just have the belief and confidence in the belief or trust in the belief to count it as knowledge? Would we agree on that?
I agree with you. I completely agree. Yeah, I completely agree, but that's not the point here.
This is important. Go ahead after this. This, when you say that, what you said is, I don't have anything that justifies the belief. Thus, when you call like your confidence faith as evidence, it's not that, because it's not something that justifies it, and you just accepted that. So now when you're talking about faith, clearly you're not talking about something that justifies the claim to be true, right? See, this is gonna fall apart quickly, because you're just admitting I don't have anything that justifies it.
Yeah, but you just made a presupposition and saying that you think God is a personal being, and God, according to the Christianity doctrine, is not even a personal being. You just said that there's a supernatural force out there, and believing in that without enough evidence is not a good, you know, valid argument. Made that argument.
No, anything that you believe in, you just believe in it. You need to justify the claim. You can't just say the confidence I have in believing it, which is faith, right? Just really trusting it and having a lot of confidence. That in and of itself isn't a justifier. That's the point. It is not a justifier. If that's the case, then Roland has a justifier. By parity of reasoning,
let me give you an example. One time, you know, I have experienced things that justified what I actually believe. You know, there were like a couple of times where I took the book and I read scripture, and the power that was in that scripture actually became manifested in someone's life. And for example, let me give an example. One time I was teaching from the book of Acts, right? Acts chapter 2. It was in Mennonite church. I was not even in the United States at the time. I was in my home country. And I actually, you know, I felt like, you know, laying hands on someone else, and that someone got filled with the Holy Ghost. And after a week, after a month, they told me that they saw the Lord, his face, and all of his image.
So what do you feel about all the people who are Muslim, all the people who are Jewish, all the people who are Hindu, all the people who believe in indigenous tribal religions from around the world, all the other religions all around the world who have the exact same story as you? I was doing this sacred ceremony. I was reading from this scripture. I did this thing and it changed this person's life. They saw our God or gods. They felt the exact same experiences. Like, why is it that every other religion has the exact same story? That
you oh, and naturalism. Don't forget me. And I went to the woods and I smoked a joint, and naturalism revealed itself to me in such a way that I can't be wrong. I had a naturalistic experience.
For sure.
So I can do that too. So anyway, answer.
What I think is all spirits, you know, are not from God. So they're like deceiving spirits, and they're like a counterfeit where Satan uses like the same formula or the same power.
So how do you know that the one that you and your friend felt when you did this ceremony wasn't a counterfeit spirit? If all these other religions have the exact same experience and they all feel the exact same thing, and some of them are fake, how do you know that yours is not fake?
Yeah, because the mind did not contradict what apostles have preached. And all the other religions actually contradicted each one of them. For example, take Islam. They don't believe that God could manifest in the flesh. That's contrary to apostles' doctrine, the basics of Christianity.
Yes, and the apostles' doctrine is contradictory to Islam, which means the apostles' doctrine is the counterfeit one, because we all know that Islam is true, right?
Yeah, but they're not authorized by God. They're created by
man. It says in their book that they are.
Man-made religion.
It's scriptural.
Yeah, but I could write a book and say that this is God speaking. That's different from
exactly. Yes. You just hit the nail on the head, dude. Woo. That's exactly right. Anybody can write a book and say anything about it, and it doesn't mean that it's true. And if you had an experience and 10 billion other people had the same experience, and you say they're all wrong because my book says they're wrong, and they all say he's wrong because my book says they're wrong, you don't have a valid argument or a valid reason to believe what you're saying. You need actual evidence.
Forrest, you're not listening. Yeah,
I'm listening to everything you said.
I feel like...
What part of what you just said did I misrepresent?
You misrepresented what I said. Okay.
What exactly did I misrepresent?
Okay. We both just had the same realization at the same time for no good reason at all. Okay. We both were like, wait, that was just a coincidence. You're right.
Okay. Here's what I think, right? So, you know, I don't actually know what you actually believe, whether you think like... You didn't actually address my question. You said that's a different question. So I believe I live in the body, right? I don't believe that I'm the body. I believe I live in a body.
Oh,
right?
Man. Yeah, so I didn't address this because this is a totally different conversation than what we were having. We were trying to talk about faith and evidence, and now you're going in a totally different direction.
And Sheep, we got to stick on a topic because there's other callers that are waiting, right? We don't want to go on six different topics. Stick to one. You can call back next week. I think you've admitted this is your second time talking with us now. So we will go through all these points. We're here for as long as we're here. So I don't really, you know, see the point of dodging the last thing, which pretty much showed that you don't have a justifier. When you call faith evidence or some type of justification, someone else can parrot that same type of reasoning. And it seemed that you understood that towards the end, which is why we had the exact same realization when you spoke the words out of your mouth, that you were getting it.
But you just equivocated.
I would just go back over and listen to this conversation. I don't know that we need to do anything else.
We're going to go ahead and move on. But Sheep, I appreciate you calling in again. We're going to go and move on to the next caller because we got a lot of people waiting. And I think we've kind of been through this whole thing with you. If you want to call back another week and talk to us again about whatever the other thing was, that's totally fine. But we can't have, you know, we've already been doing 15 minutes of this and we can't do any more.
This is a no gish gal zone.
Yeah, exactly. I'm glad that, you know, maybe he'll go back and rewatch that call and listen to himself say that, yeah, but I have this book that says this thing, which means I'm right and anybody can write anything in a book. And maybe if he forgets that he's talking, he'll be like, that's bullshit because my book says that. You know, he gets stuck in a loop with himself forever.
We have a call that specifically, I think Forrest, you almost requested this kind of call here, but Dan in Florida is saying abortion is murder, which is just, I mean, that's factually wrong. Murder is a specific legal definition and abortion does not meet that legal definition, but I'll go with the colloquial sense. Dan, welcome to the show.
Hey, Dan.
Hi, thank you.
So what do you got for us?
Hi, thank you. You may be technically correct in the legal sense.
I am.
Maybe I misunderstood the question, but you know, my thoughts are we protect all kinds of life, animals, and unborn turtles here in Florida are very protected and very sensitive, and I'm sensitive to all that. We developed a relationship with our three children before they were born. We heard their heartbeats.
No, you didn't.
We saw them.
No, you didn't. No, you didn't.
Well, I'm sorry. I felt like I did.
Yeah, I know you felt like you did, but you didn't. The relationship is between two people. So in your call screen thing,
can hear me.
So in your call screen thing, you mentioned the killing a bird in a nest or a newborn baby or anything that can't survive without care. A newborn, a bird in a nest is not a pregnancy. A newborn baby is not a pregnancy. Anything that can't survive without care. Yes, I agree. That's a responsibility. And unborn turtles aren't a pregnancy. They're sitting in a nest. What is your justification, I'm wondering, for feeling like you get to force someone else to remain pregnant against their will?
That's a tough issue, I'll admit. And I believe in freedoms. And I recognize that they're very, very tough circumstances where somebody should possibly decide that with the doctor and a lot of maybe counseling with the mom and dad. But my main concern is that we are losing respect for life in general, respect for each other.
So,
and let me ask
I'm sorry to cut question. You off there, Dan. I just want to ask you when you because you mentioned this a minute ago. You said that we protect all life, and now you're saying we're losing respect for life. Which life are you talking about specifically? Because you can say a whole human being, but human beings need to eat to survive, and we're animals, so animals require killing other life forms in order to eat, plants, other animals, fungi, you name it. Do you protect the bacteria life whenever you sanitize your countertops before you cook? Do you protect the life whenever you brush your teeth and you knock out a bunch of cheek cells? Those are human cells with human DNA. Is that life that you need to protect? Like, where do you draw the line on life you need to protect? Because just saying we need to protect life and we're losing the sanctity of life, or none of those words make any sense. Those are just buzzwords that mean nothing.
I got you. Let me give you an example. When a baby is first born, it gets into the rights of two living individuals, right? The mother's there and the doctor and the baby's born.
I think the line is if they're breathing and have a heartbeat is what it is. If I could be wrong about that. Yeah.
Okay. Could I finish my question?
By all means. I'm sorry. I just talked to somebody about this yesterday, and I think that was something that came up with them. So I just want to throw it in. Go for it. Yeah.
When the mother and dad are there, the doctor and the baby's first born, does the mom have the right to kill the child or withhold medical care?
No,
because that would be something totally different.
Right.
That would be something totally different.
You're talking about a child that is born, which is when it actually has rights. But when you say abortion is murder, you're trying to create special rights for the fetus. And I don't even think it's murder. So, for example, if someone has an abortion in your ideal world where it's murder, what should the penalty be?
Well, I don't know about the semantics. If you want to get into it.
No, sir, Dan, this is not semantics. What is the penalty? What should the penalty be in your ideal world for murder?
I really don't know the answer to that.
Do you think there should be a penalty at all?
Do you think murder should be illegal?
I'm trying to answer your question. I think it varies by circumstances.
Do you think that there should be a penalty at all for abortion?
So you think murder is only situationally wrong?
Well, let me give you an example. If God murders somebody,
God doesn't exist. I'm talking about human beings.
I'm with you on that. What I'm saying
is... No, you're not. You're not with me if your first response out of your mouth was, if God murders. Because murder is a legal construct involving one person wrongfully... Shut up. Murder is a legal concept regarding one person wrongfully taking the life of another. Gods are irrelevant. All I was asking you is, what in your perfect view should the penalty be for murder? Permanent imprisonment, a good scolding, capital punishment. Which of those is better?
Well, I was trying to answer, if you'll let me finish a half a sentence.
I tell you what, you pull some snarky shit like this again, you won't get to speak any further. Answer the question.
I'm just saying even a God gets a pass on murder. If you believe in a God and you say it's okay to kill people to take Jericho...
Dan, if you bring up God and irrelevant things one more time and in your attempt to avoid answering the questions you've been asked, I will hang up on you. What, in your perspective, in your perspective should the penalty be for murdering another human being? That's all I've asked.
Okay, most rational people will agree with you that it can vary based on the circumstances. If you're killing one person to save the life of 10 others, I would sacrifice my life, and I think I've heard you say this. You would give your kidney, your lung.
Dan, just stop. Dan, you are incapable of honestly addressing this subject. You don't start, when I ask you what in your ideal ideal circumstances should the penalty be? You started in with most rational people would, and then you describe circumstances where someone voluntarily gives up their life. That's not murder, Dan. I'm asking you, if one human being wrongfully, in violation of the law, kills another human being, what do you personally feel the penalty for that should be?
If I cause the termination of your life to save 10 others, I'm not sure that would be the same penalty.
Goodbye. Goodbye, sir. You cannot honestly address this question, and I will be not be wasting my audience's time on you any further. This question was simple and straightforward. In your personal opinion, that was it. In your personal opinion, if one person wrongfully murders another person, what should the penalty be? And then you just dodge and dodge and twist. Well, if I did it to save 10 people, that's not relevant. That's not what murder is by definition. I didn't ask about your motivation.
That was incredibly frustrating, man. I was excited for that call too. I was like, that could have been so awesome. We could have gotten into such great things.
We could have, because here's the thing, and this is why arguing with anti-choice individuals is so incredibly frustrating. Some of them want to say abortion is murder. Well, they're factually wrong on whether or not abortion is legally murder in the United States right now. It may be in other countries, but but I'm willing to give up on that and say what you're saying is you feel that abortion should be considered murder, and I'm fine with that being your opinion. But then we have to look at what the consequences are, and so we ask, what should the penalty be for murder? Now, there are some people who think the penalty for murder should be you get killed by the state. There are other people who think the penalty for murder should be life in prison. Whatever you think it is, what I find is that the people who want to say abortion is murder tend to have a different standard for one human being killing another human being than they do for one person terminating a pregnancy. Because abortion, by the way, is not killing. It is the termination of a pregnancy in its non-viable state. After that, it becomes a delivery, because we have laws that actually do, despite Dan's accusations to the contrary, set up protections for fetuses. What we're doing, though, is we're granting fetuses special rights that no other human being has, because I don't have a right to use Forrest's liver. I don't have a right to use Arden's kidney. I don't have a right to use my mom's womb. Mm-hmm. And so why on earth would we give those same rights to something that's unborn, that isn't a person? Because it needs it. And most of the time, this is about trying to hold people responsible for sex, as if the only way someone could possibly get pregnant is by carelessness through consensual sex. There are lots of different ways that people can get pregnant. And this notion that, we can just solve this by looking at biology. No, you can't, because the most we can do is probably say, hey, at what point does the brain develop enough to the point where we would consider it, like a conscious being in there? And as a former friend of mine once pointed out, it doesn't matter if it's in there writing poetry and curing cancer, it still does not have the right to use your body without consent. And I would like to know where people get off saying, hey, we can get together and say, hey, we can force you to stay pregnant against your will. Because the dangerous thing that people need to remember is that the government that can force you to stay pregnant can also force you to get abortions. Once you give up that bodily autonomy, it goes both ways. Destroying bodily autonomy doesn't end abortion. What it ends is freedom. It guarantees that you are no longer sovereign over your body. It's the government that does so. That's it.
You hit a lot of great things there. And honestly, that's what I was expecting, because I get asked all the time, like, well, as a biologist, like, when does life start? When can we say this is a human being? And it's like, dude, I can make a really good argument for and against life starting at fertilization, at implantation, at heartbeat, at breath, I can make an argument that life never really started, because it started some almost 4 billion years ago and sperm and eggs are both alive and it's never really a thing. But none of that matters. 0% of that has any difference at all. Like you said, it doesn't matter if they're writing poetry and curing cancer. None of it matters at all. It's just, can I use someone else's body for my benefit? If, my mother has the same blood type as me and I need a blood transfusion and I plug a needle with a hose coming out into her arm and take her blood, she can pull that tube out and it would end my life. But that's her body to do that with. It wouldn't be murder in that case.
Yeah.
And what I always like to point to as well as far as legality is concerned is organ donation. You have to sign off on that when you're alive. If I die and you need my heart to live and I didn't sign off on it, you don't get it. And now we're both dead.
Yep.
So you're telling me that if you have a uterus, you have less rights than a corpse. That's the best you've got. Like, so frustrating, yo. Yeah. I'm mad about that call. I'm mad about that call. I want more that actually make up for that now so we can get into it.
I have no problem at all having discussion. I've done debates on abortion. I've had discussions on abortion. But I think, you know, I did a video a couple months ago called Answer the Fucking Question. because the biggest problem that we have on the Atheist Experience and on other call-in shows and discussions and debates between atheists and secularists and humanists and liberals and progressives and, you know, right-wing, left-wing stuff is that if you go to the trouble to ask a question that is designed to simplify and clarify, it is incredibly unlikely that you're actually going to get a direct answer to that question. It does happen, you know, but it's very unlikely because by the time you get to the point where you're asking a question that simplifies and clarifies, that gets to the crux of it, somewhere in the back of people's heads, they're going to see, oh, if I answer this question and answer it honestly, it's going to lead to an outcome that's not going to favor me. And so we get defense mechanisms where your brain starts putting up walls. And you're like, but what about, but what about, but what about, but what about?
Yeah. Because at that point, the argument isn't about who's right. It's about I'm winning, you know, and that just, it blows.
We need a call with substance. Let's see. We're going to see what Kevin's got going on. Kevin can do it. I believe in Kevin. Oh, hi, hello. Kevin.
Hello.
Welcome. Hey.
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 If you gave that much time to... Hi.
Hi.
If you gave that much time to make fun of the last guy, you can give me 3 minutes to read my what I posted today about miracles and the proof of God.
No, we're not going to have it. No, we don't. This isn't a negotiation. We're not having a 3 minute speech right now. If you would like to have a
courtesy, what happened? I know. I mean, I demand that you must do this on your show.
And for the record, he would have had significantly more time if any of that had made any sense. So like, just start with making sense and then we'll go from there. What would you like to talk about?
Sure. I'll just start. I believe recorded miracles and near-death experiences, many of which are witnessed by doctors, are the proof God exists. The reason why miracles are unexplained and cannot be reproduced is because God is the only one who can cause them to happen. The reason why there is no other physical proof of God is because God is a physical being.
He's not presenting anything. Yeah. That doesn't make for a fun conversation, Kevin. We're not here just to hear you rant for 3 minutes. Yeah, thank you.
Oh, that was it. Well, I can do a lot more. Yeah.
Yeah. That was it. You said that was it.
Well, I could read another two paragraphs if you want, but
yeah, I could sit and read the Bible to you. Absolutely. Why would we want to do that? Just tell us what you believe in your own words.
That is my own words. I just wrote this today on Facebook.
Okay, so you believe that God is the only person who can perform miracles, right? Like, so that's where you landed at the end there. So obviously, you believe miracles take place, and the reason that they take place is because of God. So you are, and you believe that something like a near-death experience is a miracle. Obviously, it's like, am I understanding you correctly? There, thus far.
People having out-of-body experiences and near-death experiences, when they can record what's going on around them outside of their body from a different perspective.
What do you mean record?
You know, outside their body. They can
take my phone with me and record?
When they're dead, on the hospital bed, they can tell the doctors what they were talking about, what was going on in the hospital room at the time of their death while they're outside their body observing this.
They're not really dead, though, right? Like, because if you're dead, you're dead. There's not, like, gradients of dead. There's other dead or not.
How is it recorded? I got lost and recorded. You said they can record things out of their body. What did they record with?
No. They can't. That's another part of it. We can't use instruments to record God or the spiritual world because our instruments are made for this potentiality. We can't have instruments.
Wait, are you saying that you were in error by using the word record and I should just move on from that?
Yeah.
Yes?
The people who are having NDE, who are dead outside of their bodies, still alive in their spiritual body, can record and tell you what happened at the time.
What are they recording with?
They were dead on...
Is the first language, Kevin? I want to make sure before I...
I think he means like recount, like they can recall and then articulate.
Recall?
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah, that's what I think he means.
Okay, so you don't mean record then?
Yeah. Okay, let's carry on.
Yeah. So they can testify what their experience is. So if you ask them, they can say, I had X experience. Is that's kind of what you mean, right?
Yeah.
Or I feel like I saw this, I heard this, I felt this, those sorts of things, right?
They remember being in their spiritual astral body outside of their physical bodies while watching what the doctors are doing and saying while they're resuscitating them.
Okay. All right. So I'm with you on that. Now, is it possible that that experience that they're having, like, are you willing to entertain the possibility that that experience that they had, that perceptual experience, wasn't actually them outside of their physical body?
I mean, you could say it's a chemical reaction in their brain making them have psychosis or whatnot, but...
No. Okay, no. I'm going to... The brain scientist in me is having a nervous breakdown right now because you can't... psychosis is not...
That's something else.
That's dramatically different. So we're talking about perceptual anomalies, right? So we're talking about people having perceptual anomalies while they're in an unconscious state. That's not psychosis. It's not uncommon. It's basically what a dream is. The only difference is when somebody has a near-death experience. And I think you also conflated several terms as well, because you said they are dead and they come back to life. There is no coming back to life once you're dead. Otherwise, resurrections would be commonplace and Jesus wouldn't be so freaking special, right? Like, you're either dead or you're not dead. So... And then your other conflation in terms is saying that people are having out-of-body experiences when they haven't even flatlined, which is, I think, what you're talking to, which isn't actual death. Actual death is the prevention of sodium and ion transmission across the nucleic cell membrane in the neurons in your brain. That's actual, real, legitimate death. Like, there's no coming back from that. So when they're on the operating table, that's a different type of what you would call near-death experience. Like, there is a gradient of what people would consider those to be, like, in the circumstances where they take place. In almost all circumstances where they take place, though, there is no sort of cooperation. There's folklore about this sort of cooperation that if you dig into it, you really can't find it being substantiated in any sort of real and meaningful way. It's not really repeatable. And I beg your pardon?
It's impossible. You can't reproduce something that's happened spiritually, that happens miraculously. Right?
Well, you're just asserting that it's happening miraculously. Yeah. There's mundane explanations for these types of brain events, right? So there really and legitimately are mundane explanations for these types of brain events. I am a proponent of it that there's a receptor in your brain that's on most of your neurons, and it's called sigma-6. And the sigma-6 receptor and people may argue with me on the minutiae of this from a neuroscience perspective, but I think that this makes sense. Like, if there's a chemical that's endogenous in your system that's called DMT, and some people call it like the spirit chemical or whatever, but it actually helps to fluctuate allowing oxygen in and out of your neurons. So it's just something that in our system allows oxygen in and out of our neuronal cells. So and it's also an hallucinogen. It's both of those things. It does both of those things. And it's produced in just really small quantities generally. But if you have oxygen deprivation, in order to prevent something called apoxia, and apoxia is when your cells no longer have enough oxygen to stay alive, a little bit more DMT is produced, and your sigma-6 receptors start to suck the DMT in a little bit more as part of a survival mechanism. And because DMT is a natural hallucinogen, when your sigma-6 receptors are attempting to prevent cell hypoxia in your neurons, they will start to take the DMT in order to regulate to prevent that hypoxia, which can cause a hallucinogenic experience. And that hallucinogenic experience from a perceptual perspective can seem exceptionally real. So that's a mundane explanation from a neuroscience perspective that accounts for everything that you've just said without you providing external cooperation. So you're just asserting at this point that it's some sort of magic spirit thing based on things that you've heard that seem to affirm what you already believe and sound cool to you without actually looking into the science of what brains do.
All these chemical reactions you're talking about are randomness, right?
Whoa! Wow. No, they're not. Oh my God, they're incredibly regulated. Are you kidding? They're not random at all.
You need to go back 2 minutes because everything you just said got ignored. Cold, hard.
It's not random.
Amazing.
It's like you can predict it.
Kevin, I'm impressed. That was the most.
If it's not random.
The greatest lack of understanding of what was just said to you, I think I may have ever heard on the show.
Oh man. Okay.
But it's not random though. Like, it's.
conscious, comprehensive experiences. This isn't just some oops in their brain. Doctors have these experiences, have had these NDEs themselves when their brain dead, heart stopped. This person,
I'm so
awareness.
Yeah.
Having awareness.
I don't know that you necessarily heard what anything about, like, I'm giving you an actual physiological explanation for these types of experiences that people have that seem like very vivid and lucid and real for those people. And there's a physiological explanation. I mean, and it's one of many, like, that's just one of many explanations. It's one that I think makes a great deal of sense. And I'm sure there may be even some neuroscientists that kind of disagree with me on that. But to me, it makes a lot of sense because apoxia is something that happens when you go through oxygen deprivation, and those receptors would become more active. And a chemical that, and it, yeah. it makes sense.
Yeah.
Science.
Kevin, you brought the word miracle. Can you define a miracle?
A miracle is when something happens that we can't explain and understand or detect why it happened.
But like I explained
I'm just curious because miracles only happen when you're ignorant. Is that what you just said?
Well, yeah, we're very ignorant human beings, aren't we?
Okay. So,
shit. I mean, that's the first thing we've agreed on, I think. Yeah.
The absence of knowledge is part of the definition of what a miracle is. That's the ground you want to stand on.
When things at this point,
a yes, or, I meant it as a yes or no, Kevin. I mean, you said it. I'm double checking because I'm going somewhere with this. You're saying that your lack of understanding of something that happened is part of what makes something a miracle.
Doctors, if that's PhDs,
yeah, so he can't answer the question because the problem is that if that's your position that you stated, I'm just taking your words. If that's your position, then miracles are more likely to happen the more ignorant you are. And I don't mean stupid, just ignorant. If you're ill-informed, you don't have the information, you don't know how the sun comes up in the morning, you don't know why the moon has a light. If you're ignorant, the more things you're ignorant of, based on your definition, the more likely you are going to see a miracle. I just think that's not a good place to be.
Well, you think we're going to explain miracles one day when we get more technology, or
we don't think that miracles happen. I think that maybe that's a disconnect. We don't think miracles are. We think that there's explanations for things that we attribute as miracles.
Thanks for confirming that what I said was correct, because your follow up was not addressing anything that I said, but reaffirming. Oh, maybe someday when we know more things, we'll show that miracles didn't happen. Yeah. When we know things, miracles don't happen.
You think, but
it was your definition.
You know, it's like it's another thing, like spirit, like psychics and mediums. You know, there's so much evidence to spirituality.
Think psychics are real?
That's not good evidence. Like, you and I have different standards of evidence, evidently, like just drastically and dramatically different standards of evidence.
It's the most amazing thing for me to hear that someone is converting or comparing their religious experience to a psychic or a medium. That's profound. That's the level of evidence you need to believe that something is real is way lower than the average person.
The only way we can detect God is with our minds, with our consciousness, because that's the only way God exists. Like, he doesn't.
That's the only way we can detect anything, though. It's literally the only way we can detect anything.
If someone thinks God is real and they die, does God die too? Because you just said he only exists in the mind.
Hey, well, I believe the New Testament is literal and it is verifiable.
That is literal? A hard right turn.
Literal? It's literal? The definitions of how we should beat our slaves are literal. The fact that you should leave your family and sell your goods and even sell your clothes and buy a sword so you can follow Jesus, who doesn't bring peace and joy. He brings a sword and he separates families. You think all of that is, first of all, literal. And then I'm assuming you think that shit's a good idea, that we should sell our clothes and buy a sword. That's where you're going.
You got to put it in context. You got to take this in context.
It's always in context. Did Jesus make water into wine?
It is always in context. Well, I don't know. Do you want to get a buzz on with dinner? Or are you going to drink water or wine? You got to put things in context. Yeah. Like, come on.
Okay, Kevin. All right. I think we're done now. Like, just think about what I said. Maybe listen back, because I think it does explain what your potential evidence was. Like, with using a mundane explanation for something that you're attributing as a miracle that is just, you know, a common occurrence given what we understand about brain chemistry. Shannon. I'm going to let you go, though. Thank you, Kevin. Yeah. Have a delightful afternoon, time it is for you.
I feel bad for Christians that these are your representatives. These are the people that have come forth to try to explain something. And I don't know. I think the guy in the street corner with a billboard and a giant a Christian flag is going to be more rational than the colors we've had today. I don't know. I feel bad for the average believer. That's just pretty amazing.
Oh, man. Yes.
In that case, we've got Charles in Georgia. Pronouns are he, him, and wants to tell us about the historical events. Here we go. In the Bible that he claims have been proven true. So welcome, Charles. How are you?
Okay. How about you?
I'm alive.
Hello.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. So the proof I have is, you know, Ron Wyatt, he found the Ark. He found the Red Sea.
Oh, I'm sorry, Charles, but Ron Wyatt is a big old fraud, and that's been demonstrated over and over again. You're either joking, which I hope you are, because that's funny, or you've bought into a bunch of nonsense biblical archaeology from the biggest fraud on the planet with regard to proving Bible stuff. So the second Ron Wyatt comes out of your mouth, nobody with any sense is going to take you seriously. Please tell me you're joking.
Why would anybody think that he's a fraud? The guy made no profit from what he did. Okay.
That's not true. That's absolutely not true, but you don't have to make a profit to be a fraud. His findings have been demonstrated as fraudulent.
And which findings are those?
He didn't find Noah's Ark. There's no evidence that there is a Noah's Ark. The wheels underneath the Red Sea and other findings from him. I mean, if you just go Google Ron Wyatt fraud, you will find the explanations. I don't have either anywhere near the time to explain to you all the ways in which Ron Wyatt was wrong. But it's such a joke that, I mean, it wouldn't surprise me if it's not listed in his Wikipedia.
All I could say is, you know, you find a big boat on an elevated.
He didn't find a big boat.
What is it then?
He didn't find a boat. What you're talking about?
A rock that looks like a boat.
Here, let me make this really easy, Charles. What is your evidence that he found anything ever?
Well, there's Turkey has a big national park that they put up right there where Ron Wyatt found the Ark. Why would they do that?
So they could make money. from the gullible,
but nevertheless, you know, I mean, it's you know, I mean, there's a big, huge structure there in that location. Okay, it had metal in it that was only invented like 50, 60 years ago.
Hang on. Did you just say that it has that this ancient thing has metal in it that was only invented 50 or 60 years ago?
Yeah, it had rivets that held it together. And it was
clearly it's not old rivets. Then. So clearly it's not old then if it has metal that was only invented 50 or 60 years ago.
I mean, no, if you find an ancient, structure in the ground with metal that's only been developed a few hundred years or 60 years ago,
How would that even be remotely possible? How would that be even remotely possible to have, a modern steel in something that is as theoretically old as the Ark is? How is that possible?
Exactly my point. How is it possible? You know,
okay. The answer is it's not.
We're going to move on, Charles, because I mean, so seriously, I've been hosting this show for 17 plus years. Any quick.
All right, I'm still talking.
Any quick Google search will show you that Ron Wyatt's findings have been questioned, verified, and or debunked. And you seem to just run with all of it. Like, oh, we found something in Turkey and it had a metal that's only been developed in the last 56 years. Submit a paper and get it actually confirmed by any scientific journal anywhere on the planet. Because right now what you're doing is you're just spreading rumors that have been knocked down for decades.
So my boat that I own and live on currently is a wooden boat. It has not a single metal rivet in it. It's not riveted at all. It is not put together with rivets. So why would a boat built in 1985 out of wood not have rivets in it?
How was it built in 1985? Oh, your boat was 1985.
My boat was built in 1985. It is a wooden boat. It's mahogany ply.
your boat isn't so huge that it has to be put together, you know, in a special way. Now, then, is it? You know,
it's put together pretty close to the exact same way wooden boats have always been put together. The primary difference is the glues and some other things are more modern and therefore some significantly better than previous. But boat building, wooden boat building, is a skill that has been passed down for centuries. And guess how many of those boats have metal rivets in them? And this includes, oh, by the way, Spanish galleons, et cetera, et cetera.
Mm-hmm. I know. That's
so why are none of those boats put together with metal rivets? What's the reason?
I have no idea. I'm just telling you, this one had rivets in it.
Because it doesn't work. You have a very, very hard substance that's going to be in contact with a much softer substance. And as the boat flexes in three dimensions over the waves, guess what's happening with that metal and wood? Have you ever taken a piece of metal and dug around in a piece of wood?
It would flex. I agree.
It doesn't flake. Yeah. You know what it does? It widens out the hole. You know what we call that in the boating world? A submarine. Yeah, it's a submarine. It leaks. It's simply not possible for a metal rivet to be in a wooden boat, because if it was, we'd be using them all over the place. And we don't see it being used anywhere under any circumstances, because it's a hard substance against a soft substance, and boats flex in three dimensions. And they flex a lot, especially earlier boats. That's how they got over the seas. So your claim that metal, I don't care when the metal was made, right? And well, actually I do. Let me walk that statement back. I'll tell you why. See, a metal made 60 years ago puts you in the realm of some really, really hard metals. Like modern steels, you can't make easily without the Bessemer process or something like that. And those are very, very hard. So something in the last 50, 60 years is going to be an alloy of some kind that is even harder. So guess what it's going to do? It's going to make bigger leaks. It's simply not possible.
Let's back this up and make it really easy for Charles.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Charles, if you go out and do research, what you'll find is that the thing that Ron Wyatt supposedly found in Turkey does not match up with the biblical account at all. The things that were iron brackets were basically a version of hydrated iron oxide. There's no fossilized wood or traces of wood, reed, or elemental carbons associated with the structure. The structure itself there is consistent with a regular geological history, and it's incompatible with what the Bible says about the floodwaters lowing, because the site is 10,000 feet lower than the summit of the nearby mountain. Now, but let's set all of that aside and say that on top of a mountain, somebody found a boat-like structure that seems to match some aspects of what's reported in the Bible. Does that mean we can conclude that there was a global flood? Does it mean we can conclude that that boat is the boat in the story? Does it mean we can conclude that there's a God? The answer to those three questions is no. That's straight up easy.
Well, I mean, no. As far as it, you know, how does a huge boat like that get up to a high place like that?
So first of all, you don't know. Look. You don't know it's a boat. You don't know how it got there. But the question is that sufficient to demonstrate that a God exists, that a global flood happened, that's Noah's Ark?
Well, I'm not saying, all I'm telling you is there's evidence out there for.
I didn't ask you to tell me. I asked a question. Yeah. Is that sufficient evidence to conclude that there's a God?
No, it isn't.
Then why did you bring it up as if it were evidence to conclude that there's a God?
Because I'm looking at the evidence as a whole. Okay, I'm not looking at the evidence of one particular thing in the Bible.
But the one particular, the first thing you pointed out is completely irrelevant and broken. It cannot do the thing that you could. So we asked you to demonstrate that a God exists, and you start with a fraudulent BS archaeologist with no real credentials who's been debunked left and right and claim, he found Noah's Ark. No, he didn't. You said he found Noah's Ark, and now you're admitting that there's no way to know it's Noah's Ark, which means you lied earlier.
No, I didn't say there's no way to know that it's Noah's Ark.
I just asked you, is there any way to demonstrate that that's Noah's Ark? And you acknowledge that the answer was no. How can you demonstrate that structure that he found is Noah's Ark?
No, what's that?
How do you demonstrate that the structure that Wyatt supposedly found is Noah's Ark?
Well, it looks like a boat. It's the same dimension.
Oh my God, Charles, you cannot be this stupid. How do you demonstrate that this is actually no, is it possible for you or anybody else to demonstrate that the structure on that mountain is in fact Noah's Ark?
You know, if you have a huge structure in a mountain range.
Charles, why won't you answer the question that I've asked you? Is it possible for you or anyone else to demonstrate that the structure found on that mountain is in fact Noah's Ark?
I've already said no to that question.
Then you were lying before, and then you lied again when I told you that you were lying about it, because you don't get to call it Noah's Ark, and you don't get to say it was Noah's Ark, and then acknowledge, as you've done twice now, that there's no way to demonstrate that it is Noah's Ark. Why are you lying for Jesus?
All I can say is, okay, if you look at something, okay, and it matches up with the evidence at hand, okay? Sometimes you just have to look at something and look at it logically and say, you know, this has got to be it, okay? And then when you take 10, 20, 30 things from the Bible and look at the historical events through time, okay? And, you know, pull these things up out of the ground, sooner or later, you can take all of them together and make a determination, okay? I'm not
so the style of argument you're making, the problem with the style of the argument you're making is I can use everything you just said to prove Spider-Man exists in New York. I can do everything you just said. I can do that with.
Oh, really? How? Do you find webs all over?
No, they're biodegradable.
Did Ron Wyatt find any animal skeletons near that boat structure? Nope.
No.
Did they find any petrified waste products or anything? Did they find anything that was wood? Nope.
No. Well, it was petrified wood.
No, actually. See, this is the thing, Charles, is that you don't have any knowledge. You don't have any firsthand knowledge. You don't have any expertise. And when you're asked about how you would demonstrate this is true, what your argument boils down to is, well, when you look around at the world and you start seeing some things that line up with an ancient book, I'll just go ahead and say that the ancient book is right. Well, I'm sorry, but that is fallacious reasoning.
I went to his museum in Tennessee, okay? I held a piece of the wood.
It's not a museum. It's a con, but go ahead.
Whatever, you know, I mean, you know, whatever you think, you know, I mean, have you been there? How do you know it's a con?
Because I've studied up on this for more than the last 20 years. And instead of just going with what Ron Wyatt supposedly reported and what the Wyatt family is trying to make money off, did you pay money to get into that museum there, Charles?
As a matter of fact, I didn't, no.
Did you make a donation?
I didn't give them a thing.
Okay, well, cool. Congrats.
No, I didn't make a donation.
You gave them attention, and now you're out here spreading the word of what they found as if it's gospel, and it's not. It's fraud.
Well, in your opinion, not in my opinion.
It's no, not just in my opinion. Okay, in the opinion of all respected scientific experts in this field who have reviewed this, it's fraud.
Look, anytime somebody finds evidence of the Bible, okay, it's always brought to the specialists and told how stupid it is, okay?
Why do you think that is?
You know,
why do you think that is? Do you think there's a global conspiracy to hide the truth of the Bible, or do you think that the scientific community just simply will not accept shitty evidence?
I think the scientific community will not accept any evidence at all about God.
Okay, goodbye, sir, because you're basically claiming that there's a global conspiracy among all experts and scientists to hide the truth that you and others with no expertise and no evidence claim is the truth. That is absolutely ridiculous. It's a waste of time to keep talking as if there's a global conspiracy to hide the truth of the Bible. Why won't God show up and just fix it right now?
Because God, you know, God has given us what he's given us, okay? And
goodbye. I don't need tautologies. When I say, why won't God show up and fix it right now? To say God has given us what he's given us. Yep, I agree. God has given us nothing. There is no God in evidence to say that we've been given anything.
This one should be interesting as well. We're going to take Jay right here in Texas. How you doing, Jay? You're on with Jim and Forrest.
Hello, Jay.
I'm doing good. Happy Easter. How about? I'm doing good. How about yourself?
Doing mighty fine. So you had a near-death experience that proves the afterlife.
Well, it proves that there's something after this consciousness, I think. Just like how...
Would you mind telling us why?
Well, my experience is when I went, it was just clear and everything. And I saw myself, but except myself was golden. And
Could I interrupt you for a second?
And yes.
Yeah, I'm sorry. This might seem rude, and I promise I'm not trying to be, but I would like you to explain, before you explain what you saw, or rather than explaining what you saw, would you please explain to me why it convinced you that there's something more beyond this life? Because lots of people have had near-death experiences, lots of people have had out-of-body experiences, lots of people have had all these things, and not a single one of them actually gives us any compelling evidence for anything after death. The very first call, we talked about lucid dreams, we talked about DMT, we talked about chemicals in the brain that cause these hallucinations, we talked about all that stuff earlier. So what I want to understand, rather than what you saw, I'm sure what you saw was really, really cool. I too have had cool dreams. Why does it convince you that there's something beyond this life? Why is it that poignant to you?
Because it was real, and I was dead. They had me on life support. I had a full
blood. Yeah, lots of people have died and come back from that. And
the whole thing was it was like, I don't know how to put it, in the sense of, because I may have not been physically feeling it, but it was feeling it. And you may not be able to, I don't know, I guess it's like a transition of state, like from water to gas to solid, from fire to smoke, from wood to charcoal.
Yeah, phases, got it, yeah.
I mean, it's not in that same state, but then again, it was very real as I'm talking to you right now. And as
the real as in feeling, the real as in touch.
Well, the problem that I have is the brain is more than capable of taking hallucinating things in such a way that they're real, that they seem real. I mean, there's the famous mathematician, his last name is Nash, and his first name is Graham, is notorious for this. If you watched Beautiful Mind, you know, he thought real people were giving him information about communists and plots and acting on it. He thought they were real. Brains are known to do this. So how do you differentiate a brain being a brain and it actually being reality, or reality being just in your brain and actual reality?
Well, I've talked to other people who've had these same, and some people tell me they just see darkness. And I don't know, because what I was doing before my accident is I lived a pretty karma positive life. And the people that I talked to who had this happen kind of did very like unpositive things. And
So you think that the people who didn't see anything, that isn't evidence for there being nothing, the same way as you seeing something is evidence for something, it's evidence for you just being a better person than them?
I wouldn't say that. I would just say I don't know.
So let me ask you this then, because Jim just asked a really pointed question, and I feel like it kind of got skimmed past a little bit. So I'm going to elaborate on just a little bit. Is when I was in college, I did acid once, right? And the world got very weird, and the back of my couch became a living mural of cowboys and Native Americans interacting. And it was very, very, you know, moving to me to see this. And then I tripped and fell off of my own face at one point. The world was insane. And then I came down. And that stopped being the case. So how do I know that my experience wasn't me actually interacting with another dimension beyond our own, and it wasn't actually me seeing beyond the fabric of our reality and all the, or I was high? How do you know that your experience was this other plane of existence rather than your brain was deprived of oxygen and it saw weird things? You had a dream.
Well, because I really didn't see weird things. The plane was just like the exact setting and scenery was just like where I was, because I had
cool. I had a dream about doing dishes once. Does that mean that it was more real because it was just normal doing dishes?
No. My wound was self-inflicted, and I woke up in the same place where I was, where I did the thing.
Yeah, that's fine. What I'm asking is, how do you know that it was anything more than a hallucination? What gives you the reason to believe that this was anything more than just your brain dying and coming up with crazy, fantastic. Because right now, you're seeing and hearing and feeling and tasting and smelling. These are all processes in your brain, right?
They were carrying me to the, I was feeling them carrying me to the medical tent and them taking off my clothes, cutting it off, and them cutting open my side.
I like to sleep with the TV on, and sometimes I'll have dreams that incorporate what the game grumps are saying on TV. That's how dreams work. You incorporate things from outside your dream all the time. That's not anything magical.
No. This is what they were doing, because that's what happened when I got a self-inflicted gunshot wound when I was deployed, and I was feeling all this. They had picked me up and they did all this. They had told me this, but then I went back to the place where I fell, which was about 200 yards back. And that's where all this stuff happened. And then I had just woken up in Germany, and I thought I was just out for a couple of minutes.
So do you accept the idea? Like, do you think it's true that people can lose time, that they can be in a state, like a fugue state, where they lose? Okay, so that is a thing that can happen.
I've had dreams.
No, I'm not just talking about dreams. I'm talking about situations where people will lose whole hours, maybe even whole days of their lives, and they just don't remember it. Do you think that's a thing that can happen? Because it is. That can happen. It can happen usually in response to trauma, right? So people can lose track of time. People can lose memories. People can have hallucinations. People can have crazy dreams. People can incorporate things in the real world into their hallucinogenic state. Brains that are deprived of oxygen, people who are dying, people who are suffering, people who are going through a suicide attempt, whatever, do see these crazy things and have these out-of-body experiences. Not one of those things leads to a supernatural claim or evidence of a supernatural claim. So you putting them all together doesn't lead evidence of... Sorry?
What about if it was just a transition, like I told you before, with water to gas to solid, from liquid...
You would have to then give me evidence that there was something to transition to. You would have to give me evidence that there was something to transition to before I...
Like, do we have to transition into like another physical being? Or just another wavelength, because radio waves exist, right?
Sure, but they have nothing to do with your consciousness.
Yeah.
But what is consciousness, though?
It's the emergent property of the electrical
feeling, right?
Yeah, this is what we just talked about. It's the emergent property of the electrochemical activity of your brain. Is the last call we just had.
That's a feeling, though, right? That's a feeling, right?
Feelings are associated with it, but I wouldn't say consciousness is a feeling. No.
But it's something that can be measured, though, right? You can measure it, though, right? Like, we could measure.
Yeah, I wouldn't
it.
Know. I guess so. Yeah.
Database and everything, right? Right.
Sure. Okay, in the same way, you can talk about it, like,
if we can measure it, then we could also like deconstruct it in a way, right?
I'm going to give you the exact same example I gave the last caller. Then the exact same example I just gave the last guy. If I light a candle, there is a flame on the candle. If I blow out the fire, where did it go? Did the fire become something new, or did it just stop existing? The chemical reaction that is fire, converting hydrocarbons and oxygen into carbon dioxide and water, stopped. The chemical reaction that is your consciousness stopped.
No, yeah.
It's just like
no, the fire did not become smoke. The fire did not become smoke.
That's not how it is.
Brought me back. Well, then what is?
Yeah, that's good. That's good. That's good doctors and good medicine.
Smoke, right? Yeah.
Sorry.
But see, just like the candle could. Yeah, but what is? But see, just like the candle could be relit, I could be brought back to life, and just like how my flame went out and turned into smoke. But the smoke could come back because the fire could be relit and you can blow out the candle again and smoke will come back.
Right. I just want to be very clear. I just want to be very clear. There are no units. Like, so when you talk about fire, it doesn't turn into anything. Fire is a chemical reaction. It's converting hydrocarbons and oxygen into carbon dioxide and water. That is the chemical process of fire. Yeah. Consciousness is a chemical reaction as well. That didn't change into anything else. The reaction stopped. It ceased. And then you can restart it, but that's all. So when you die, your consciousness stops. You don't transition into anything else because there's nothing to transition into. It is a process, a chemical process that has stopped. There's no next thing.
Yeah, but where does the smoke go? Just like consciousness.
Of a fire?
Consciousness have to stay in the vessel.
Smoke is a byproduct of fire. It is not anything to do with the fire itself. Smoke is a byproduct of fire in the same way me writing on a paper is a byproduct of my consciousness. The writing on the paper can't turn back into me.
But what is the byproduct of your consciousness after you leave your body? Like, where does that go?
No consciousness stops. We have no reason to believe that it continues. Organic,
yeah, the byproduct of my consciousness after I die is this rotting sack of meat that's going to get eaten by bacteria. That's all.
Yeah, but we can make humans. Human beings are just elements. They're elements that a kid can buy with his allowance. We can
I agree.
Make a human being, but why?
We can make one
human being though. Why can't we put something in that human being that makes him a human being that we could all say that's a human being that I could talk to?
Oh, you do. It's called DNA.
We can physically make one. Yeah,
it's called DNA. That's what makes us human. DNA makes us human. There's nothing external to us. So if you're arguing for the concept of a soul, what you need to do is show how a soul interconnects with the neurons and how it interacts with neurons and how it makes neurons fire. Because we know how neurons fire, and there's nothing magical about it, right? There's no soul there. There's no consciousness there. There's no such thing. Then whatever you call a soul created by neurons will die when the neurons die, right? And we also know this because of
the flame and the.
Well, so explain how damage to the brain can create a whole new consciousness, a whole new person with a whole different set of EKGs. How does that happen with brain damage?
It doesn't create a whole new person.
Yes, it does.
A whole new person, but that consciousness in that brain? That consciousness
Sufficient damage to the brain can create a whole new person with a whole new set of likes, dislikes, and a whole new set of EKGs. Whole new person out of it.
Well, then that would be probably more of an evidence of consciousness than anything else, because if it was consciousness, then...
Consciousness comes from the brain.
Kind of trauma would be done.
Have you heard of Phineas Gage, Jay?
Oh, yeah.
Jay, have you ever heard of a person named Phineas Gage?
No.
Okay, so Phineas Gage was a guy. This is a very, very famous case study from every single neurobiology, every single psychology class ever, right? You've got... Hang on.
You've got in your head.
Here we go with the props. Yay!
All right, so on, inside your brain, I know we do have some audio listeners, but I'll explain, okay? Inside your brain, you've got different lobes. You've got different parts of your brain that do different things. This front area right here is called your frontal lobe, right? This is where your personality sits, among a lot of other things. I am oversimplifying here. This part here is where you are. Right? This is why a frontal lobotomy, basically just turns off a person's personality. This part of your brain is really important for decision making. It's really important for ethics and moral thinking. It's really important for deciding what you want to do with your life, actions and consequences. That's all part of this. Phineas Gage was working on a railroad back in the 1800s. He was known for being a very sober, very kind, very rational, very calm, very hardworking person. And he was in a tunnel working on this railroad. There was an explosion and some dynamite went off that wasn't supposed to, and it launched a steel rod straight up through his skull and completely obliterated his frontal lobe. And it was so hot and so fast that it cauterized on the way out. And he was able to get up and walk out of the mine with this giant hole that just blew off half of his brain. And he went to the doctor, and the doctor was like, "Hey, you're all right, go back to work tomorrow, you know, take some aspirin, walk it off." And he did. And from that day forward, Phineas Gage was violent and cruel and sexually aggressive and mean, because it took out this part of the brain that handles that kind of processing of saying, what kind of person do I want to be? Do I want to obey my raw animal instincts, or do I want to think a little bit more? This right here is what causes your consciousness. And when Phineas Gage lost a part of it, he became a completely different person. It completely changed who he was. This was the reason why it's such a famous case study, is because this is one of the reasons that we learned about different parts of your brain doing different things. The doctors are like, "Hey, this part of the brain seems to be pretty important for this." And so if we can completely change a person just by changing the structure of this lump of jelly right here, then how can you sit here and say that my consciousness goes on beyond this brain? Did a part of Phineas Gage go off and become something else, and then the rest of it came along with it when he died? Did Phineas Gage's soul change? Did his soul fragment? Like, what could you possibly point to that goes beyond the actual physical thing that we see that does everything you're claiming?
Where does data go in a computer when you get rid of it?
It doesn't.
Completely different question.
If you break a computer, the data is no longer there. If you want to get super technical, we can talk about the electronic domains and the little magnets of blah, blah, blah. But if you destroy a computer, the data is gone. You can no longer recover it. Well, if I blow out a candle, the flame is gone. You can no longer recover it. If you destroy a brain, a person is gone. You can no longer recover it.
But their feeling, though, their presence, this like state of them, could be
is what
that we're saying. That's gone.
It's gone.
Yeah.
Well, not well. How do you say? Like the memories of the people that they came in contact with, those are real, right?
Well, yeah, sure. Those other people's memories are real, and then when they die, those memories are gone.
Right.
It's like saying if I take a picture of you. You know, and then I have this photo, and if I burn the photograph, where did you go?
Go. It's just like, okay, like, you know how we have this cloud thing where all our data goes, right? Well, what is the data? What is data? What is data? Like, what is that? If I have 1,000 pictures on a thing, it's not the same whether I have like 1,000 physical copies of a picture, right?
It's the exact same.
You have 1,000,
we call it, but is
it? If you copy a picture 1,000 times, you have 1,000 copies of it. 1,000 individual
copies. Yeah, it doesn't matter if it's on a computer or whatever. Like, computers are physical things. The cloud is not an ethereal The cloud is just the word that we give for a bunch of literal physical servers that actually have more.
Yeah.
Exactly, yeah. So that's how a hard drive works. It's just switching these little domains.
Right?
Yeah, and if you destroy that hard drive, the data's gone.
And if you put those... Yeah, but if you put those all that terabytes on pieces of paper, it would probably fill up warehouses.
So what? Space, yeah, right? I don't see what you're wondering from point to point to point, and you seem to be missing hours, which is that once you're dead.
No, what I'm saying is, if you destroy the data, where does that data go?
It's gone. It stops existing.
It isn't a thing anymore, man.
That's the whole point.
Matter can't be created or destroyed, but it can change forms. So, you know, this group of atoms here in the shape of a microphone, if I were to change them into a different shape, they would not be a microphone anymore. It wouldn't be a thing. It's the same thing with data. It's the same thing with memories. It's the same thing with people. Same with everything. If you destroy it, it is destroyed. Period.
And he dropped.
I'm sorry you had a bad dream, Jay.
Yeah, same here.
It's time to get sexy. So watch Secular Sexuality Live Thursdays at 7 p.m. Central. Visit tiny.cc/YTSS and call into the show at 512-991-9242 or connect to the show online at tiny.cc/callsex.